Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I'm your host, Jay Larson. And joining me this week, as always, is your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I keep missing that trip to the zoo I'm trying to take my kids on, but
You did take them camping?
No, I went camping by myself.
Oh, you went by yourself? Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to get any reading or piece done.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I'm jealous of that you just went camping.
Yeah, I wanted to try. There's a place near Houston called Double Lake. Yeah, and it was 43 degrees.
Was that the low or
that was the low? But it actually it must have been close to freezing though, because my car had ice on the the top of my car. Frost. Had iced over or frosted. And it was like a solid layer, so it got lower than that, I think.
Interesting.
But so I don't have a cold weather sleeping bag.
Sure, yeah.
And
yeah.
I was kind of like, okay, well I'll be okay because I brought a blanket and I just was like, I'll wear my clothes, I'll be in my sleeping bag, and I'll wrap this like really warm blanket I have. It was not enough because like I kept waking up just because my head would come out of
the
bundle. And it was much too cold for me, and I think I need a better sleeping bag, because I think the one I'm using cost me like $20.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Turns out even nice ones can be pretty cheap nowadays. But yeah. I'm jealous. Brian and I spent some time planning camping trips yesterday and this previous week, and our first one is going to be in about the middle to end of April, and we're going to go down to southern Utah for that, and it should actually be fairly warm down there by that point.
Nice.
But yeah, it'll be nice, and then we basically about every 3 or 4 weeks we'll be doing a camping trip through the summer. So
that'll be nice though. That'll be really gorgeous time.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the plan / hope.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, you've been doing okay?
Yeah. My local store started up a league, and we got our first week in this week. And it's interesting how they set it up. You lock in 7 characters and 5 tactic cards, and then you can every week you can change out 3 of your character. You have 3 flex characters and 3 flex cards, so you can change your list a little bit every week. And I'm going with a Criminal Syndicate Spider Foes list, and I played my first game, and I really like Criminal Syndicate, which with a bunch of 3-point characters, I think it's a lot of fun.
Right. Yeah.
Just there's a lot of like, I don't need to attack you, I'm just gonna run a guy and score a point, and you're gonna have to fight Crossbones over there. And it's really funny. One of my goals has been put Crossbones as far as he can go, as fast as he can go. And so usually by round 2, he's on a far objective scoring, and you're just like, yeah, deal with Crossbones over there, and have fun with that.
Nice. Yeah. I still have not really been able to get too much in the way of gameplay. I have a weekly Zoom role-playing group, and on the Monday before they were going to count up the votes, like Brian was super stressed out and worried that about things not going well. Mm-hmm. And so I like took that week off of role playing and turned out he was basically totally right. So I think I made this joke in on another podcast, but I'm still sticking to it. It like today feels like December 45th of 2020.
Gotcha.
And like we had these grand New Year's resolutions that didn't happen. I've been stress eating like crazy. Mm-hmm. And so the hope is that in a week I'll be on the wagon and start hitting some goals. So we'll see.
You can do it, Jay.
Well, thank you.
You got this.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's my life right now.
Yeah.
So let's do a little news and announcements about the podcast.
Yeah.
So this is something that I'm kind of excited about. We hit, you know, a while ago the 1 year mark of the podcast and feel like we've been hitting our stride with each other and with the podcast a little bit. And one of the things though that we felt, I've felt this kind of from the beginning, but I didn't really know what to do about it or et cetera. And one of the issues that I kind of have had with our format is that we will be talking about a character in game and get in a groove with the conversation, and then we'll stop midway through. And then we'll start talking about the comic book club, and then we'll stop partway through, and then, you know, pick up the disjointed halves in the next episode. And one of the things that we're going to try and that I'm hoping will lead to something that's improved is we're going to, on the main episode, we're going to do all of the comic book club in that episode. And then in the bonus episode, we will talk about the character in game, and then we will also talk about some other things that are on our minds, like coming up this week we have WandaVision releasing, and we'll probably do like at the end of it do like a spoiler alert and then talk about those episodes after that. Another thing we're looking at is that we're looking at switching from a per creation format on Patreon, and doing a monthly fee, and we're going to reduce the price by quite a bit on what we're charging on the Patreon, so that hopefully more people will be able to subscribe. And we're also looking at the goal, or the commitment is, I mean, the goal, I guess, is to have an episode out every week, but the commitment is with switching to the monthly payment that we'll have at least 3 episodes out a month is something that we'll end up achieving. So hopefully
we've averaged out at 4.5 a month so far. So we got this.
We got it. Yeah. I mean, I think that we'll hit those goals. It's not going to be a problem, but I guess I want to hear from you, Greg. What are your thoughts on all these changes?
Well, I'm excited mostly. I like my main thing is I want more engagement. I want more people like listening and talking to us. And, you know, one reason I think I was so on board with the change was that I saw someone talking about someone else's podcast, actually not ours, and talking about how they it was a little bit of a rant, but they were basically like, I hate it when you split content in half. And they were right. Basically saying they would rather have like, here's some content and then here's another piece of content that's separated, so that you can get someone's complete like views and thoughts on something. And that kind of was something that's been like, it's been stuck in my head. And so being able to make some big change and like adapt to it, like that's a bonus. And then also like a better price point, for our listeners is, I mean, I'm sure nobody out there is like upset that it's going to cost less money. And so other than that, I really hope that, you know, people who were kind of like, eh, that seems like a lot, will make the jump. And I think we've reached a pretty competitive price point that will be much more appealing. And I'm really excited. I want a lot more people to be with us here in this journey. So.
Yeah. And I guess another thing that I'll say with it real quick is that, part of the reason why we decided to go with having the comic book club in the main episode, as opposed to the bonus, is that there really is a lot of really great content and podcasts out there. And I feel like one of the things that is unique about Recalibration Matrix is the comic book club, which I think we're one of the only ones doing that. I say that, but I guess I don't actually know.
If, by the way, listeners, if somebody else has comic book content like we do, I would like to know who they are so I can go spy on them, because I haven't been able to find them. So on that note, Jay.
So it's something that makes our podcast unique, and that's I guess the part that I felt like would be best to have in the main episode.
Yeah, absolutely. So on that note, Marvel Unlimited sent me an email, and it was my 2020 year in review. And I feel like I'm a little bit, it's a little bit braggy and a little bit funny. So first of all, easiest one, it says, I like reading comics featuring the X-Men. And I'm like, yes, right now I'm reading a lot of X-Men. But then it said, I passed my time reading 915 books in 2020, which is a lot. And I feel like that's a little bit excessive, but it's been a rough year, y'all. So, but then it said, I've spent 2,040 hours and 22 minutes reading comics. So quick, I didn't believe that. So I had to double check. That's 5.5 hours a day, which cannot be right. that's it's almost 2 hours per comic issue. So that's not right. But I saw that and I was kind of like, no, I didn't. And what I'm pretty sure happened is that when the app is minimized, it counts that as me reading. So hopefully I can get a better judge on that. But 915 comics, that's fucking awesome. And that's why people should stop arguing with me about comic book things on the internet.
that's correct. You can argue with me about it. And yeah. That'll be fine.
You could probably win against Jay.
Yeah. So the plan is that we will, through the rest of January, have the current Patreon tiers, and then in February we'll go live to the other tiers, and people can adjust and back, et cetera, and do all of that.
Now, Jay, do you know, does it adjust our subscribers currently?
I'm not entirely positive on that.
Okay. Well, it will be less, and I'll definitely be posting about that on social media to get everybody's attention. But please, if you are a current subscriber, update to the new plan. And if you're not, give us a try. Give us a month or two to change your mind, right? We would appreciate it.
All right. Well, let's, I guess, go ahead and dive into the comic book book club.
Yeah. So let's start. We did the two Brotherhood of Mutants leaders, and this week and next week we're going to be doing the X-Men leaders. First off is Cyclops. A little bit of backstory. Cyclops is an original X-Men. The founding X-Men that Professor X got were Cyclops, Angel, Iceman, Jean Grey, and Beast. And Cyclops, kind of from the beginning, was like the leader character. He's the quarterback, of the X-Men. And that kind of puts him into a trope almost. He's handsome. He's got, you know, a good personality usually. And it also makes him boring as shit sometimes. Depending on the writer, depending on who's got him. And I think a lot of people don't like him. What do you think, Jay? Does that quarterback description kind of fit?
I think I also think that part of it is that he's also, like, him and Wolverine, I think I said this before, but, like, him and Wolverine are kind of at odds with each other a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people really like Wolverine. They identify with him. He's more popular. And so I think that sometimes brushes off on him. I mean, I don't know. Do you think that that's true?
I think that's part of it, why some people are kind of anti-Cyclops. But I also do think that a lot of times Cyclops has to have, like, kind of artificial conflicts that are just, I don't know. So for example, there have been some comics where, in order to make Cyclops interesting, they, like, made him kind of a, like, mutant fascist, almost, who's just less interesting than Magneto. There have been comics where he's just there to, like, stop more popular characters from doing things. But yeah, you're right. I like him going up against Wolverine constantly. But, like, he did have almost 20 years, right, to be the leader without Wolverine existing. So I don't know. I think there's a lot to Cyclops that, like, has nothing to do with Wolverine.
Right.
So I think there's a lot to his character. I really like him.
I think I think that there's also part of it is, like, you know, there used to be the joke in on some of the old War Machine podcasts that Crump, Nick Crumpton, was, like, the most punchable guy in War Machine. Uh-huh. And there's sometimes that Cyclops just kind of comes across like that.
He feels that way sometimes. I'm not gonna defend Cyclops, because I think a lot of times he does have a shitty position in stories. And, like, a lot of times the boss type character is not an easy character to write. And that's kind of how he feels. He is very, like, he's continuing Professor X's like, job, but he doesn't have everybody's respect like Xavier does.
Right.
But in a lot of ways he's doing the same things.
I mean, most of my, like, I'm not sure if I saw the X-Men cartoons before the movies or not, but one of my initial main exposures to Cyclops was James Marsden playing him. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, that was enough to get me on board, I guess, so.
He's a very likable guy.
It's true, yes.
Anything else you want to say about Cyclops?
I know, not really.
Okay. I think that's a pretty good whatever. So partly because of that, like, problem with Cyclops, I picked a story arc I thought he was really effective as a leader in. So I picked Astonishing X-Men, issues 1-6. I also picked this because it's written by Joss Whedon, who is a very well-known and popular figure in, you know, pop culture and nerddom in general. Although there's a bit of, like, negative news about him recently.
That's kind of an understatement.
I'm sorry, really fucking bad. if even part of the stuff about him in Justice League are true, like, it's bad. But,
I haven't really heard of the Justice League stuff.
Oh, no? What else did he do? Oh, God.
I guess first, what was the Justice League stuff?
The actor who played Cyborg has basically said he's, like, a really toxic boss, and that it was, like, racist as well. Like, he made a racist and, like, sexist work environment, and that basically, like, all the work he did on Justice League was completely toxic and terrible for everybody. And I believe the executives have basically said, like, that that's not true, but then a few of the actors have kind of been like, yeah, it was, but we still want to work for Warner Brothers kind of thing.
So the stuff I had read about was basically, you know, he kind of did a good job marketing himself as, like, you know, this feminist and this guy who, you know, loves writing strong female characters and stuff like that. And, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer or, mm-hmm. you know, et cetera, right? And then he just had like, I think it was in a divorce process where like stuff came out where he was just like really, really bad with women and was, did not live up to like this, you know, feminist title that he had kind of promoted for himself. So
yeah,
I think he's kind of on blacklist for Hollywood at the moment.
Well, the artist is also John Cassidy, who is one of my favorite artists.
It felt so nice to I just loved the art in this book, especially the last.
I thought you would, and John Cassidy is one of my favorite artists. I really like the way he does like figures. And so I that was another part of it. He's the artist of my all-time like favorite comic. Well, one of my all-time favorite comics. I'm sure I could list like 30 if you gave me time. But like I found out about him from a comic called Planetary. But I just think his action and all like the way he draws faces and he kind of does exaggerated faces. And so sometimes they can be a little ugly, but it's because he wants them to be ugly. But anyways, this is a very well-known, like arc for the X-Men. It was part of a kind of relaunch for X-Men. And it was very successful and very well-known at the time. And it kind of helped launch the like next 5 or 6 years of X-Men comics. So, short summary is that at this point the X-Men haven't really been superheroes. They've been more recovering from disaster after disaster. They've been very protective and closed off. And Cyclops has decided that them being closed off is partly to blame for the problems they're having. So he wants to get this X-Men team out to be superheroes again. And he kind of compares them to like, hey, do you think the Fantastic Four and the Avengers have people coming with like torches and pitchforks? And so the team he picks is Emma Frost, who is his lover at the time, Kitty Pryde, Beast, and Wolverine. And so those five are going to be the new X-Men. And at the same time, they're all teaching at the school as well. And I think they bring Kitty Pryde back because she hadn't been involved with the X-Men for a while. So this is also kind of a Kitty Pryde is returning to be a staff member at the school. And so it kind of starts with this big announcement that a scientist has discovered a cure for mutants, which is, you know, something that immediately a lot of mutants will want and also will be weaponized against mutants. And it goes from there and it introduces this new villain called Ord, who is from Breakworld, and he is backing this mutant cure while at the same time trying to hunt down and eliminate the X-Men. And it's kind of interestingly disjointed, but we find out as the story goes that he's come to Earth because there's a prophecy that one X-Men will destroy his planet. And so his cure is kind of an excuse to remove mutant powers. Well, at the same time, he's there to kill them.
I guess maybe I totally missed this. I thought that he was like he had like come back in time, and that they knew that there was.
I don't think he went back in time because I think it was that Agent Brand of S.W.O.R.D. It was the scene where Nick Fury and Agent Brand are talking about it that they have extreme and they mentioned like they have extremely accurate predictions. Was okay. Part of that story. So I'm pretty sure it's a prediction. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he went back in time. But anyways, he has to stop it. But they also don't know which X-Men it is. So, so the X-Men are going in to destroy the cure because they find out that, they're testing this on mutant DNA, and Beast looks at the DNA and he says something along the lines of like, oh my god, why can't things stay buried? To which Cyclops thinks that means it's Jean Grey is the one that they have. So they go in, they're beating up guards, they're using their powers in really cool ways. And then Kitty Pryde finds out there's like weird metal that's way too thick, and she kind of phases through it, to which she finds Colossus. At this point, Colossus had killed himself about 5 years before as a way of curing old... There was a disease that only killed mutants, and the cure had to be injected into a mutant, and then it would, like, explode out of them. And so Colossus saved all the mutants by injecting himself. But it turns out he was brought back to life by Ord in order to, like, test his mutant cure and to have a genetic, you know, X-Men to test it on. The X-Men... Well, Colossus ends up almost, like, killing Ord, and then they are stopped by S.H.I.E.L.D., who tell them that Ord has diplomatic immunity, and they kind of explain that plot I mentioned. And so it explains a bit, and Ord, they're fighting, and Ord tries to escape, and then they end up capturing Ord, and S.H.I.E.L.D. takes him away. And the X-Men kind of go back and kind of reflect on how weird this is. But it's kind of a, you know, hey, we have Colossus back, and we have this new team. And so now there's six people on that new X-Men team, and it begins this new era of, hey, the X-Men are superheroes. We're going to be going out on missions. And it was all brought about by Cyclops. And so, Jay, what did you think of Cyclops in this story arc?
It's kind of interesting. I didn't think that he was necessarily a main character compared, or as main of a character, as prominent as some of the other ones. But I don't know. I don't know. What do you think about him?
Did he seem lame? did he seem useless and lame? Like, all the criticisms about Cyclops is that he's just there, right? He's lame, he doesn't get shit done, he's kind of boring. And I don't think he is in this one. I think he's, you know, he brings the team together, he is, he's pretty active at, like, responding and planning forward. I really liked the jokes about him and Emma Frost. Specifically, Kitty thinks that Emma Frost is just mind-controlling Cyclops. And then there's the page where he, like, it just has the panel of them talking. And then he turns to her and he's like, you're not, right? And then she's like, you're never seeing me naked again. I was like, it's so goofy. And, like, that you can tell that Emma Frost and Cyclops have this, like, this nice little relationship going that's... They're both in command of the team, but they're also, like... They work well together, and I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like some of my favorite parts of this arc didn't involve necessarily Cyclops. It was more like, Emma Frost and Kitty Pryde, like, kind of going back and forth with each other, or like when Kitty was like making fun of Emma Frost teaching ethics.
Oh, yeah. That was fantastic. She brought it up, like, at really great times. It was really funny.
Yeah.
The part where Emma Frost turns to Diamond, and Ord is like, this can cut through anything, and she's like, oh, good to know, and she puts the scientist in front of her. There were a lot of, like, really cute moments that were just very funny. So you would kind of feel like that Kitty and Emma are the main characters?
It kind of felt that way. Because it felt like it was they did a lot on like Kitty coming back to the X-Men, and then Kitty and Emma just had a lot of interaction with each other. It felt like,
yeah, and Kitty and Cyclops's, like, relationship is really important as well. It doesn't kind of go into it a lot, but we talked about it before, how there was this weird, like, she's too young for me thing. And well, they're both adults now, so, like, maybe things will happen going forward is kind of the feel I got at the end.
Mm.
But It's, I would say Kitty Pryde is definitely like the character that we're supposed to see through the eyes of.
Right.
Which is classic, like, X-Men. Kitty Pryde is always our point of view character.
Why is, why is that?
I think it's because she started out that way. She was the 15-year-old new to the team, like, excited to be a superhero character. Oh, the part where Emma Frost makes fun of how she's had, like, 7 superhero names? Perfect.
That was good, yeah.
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 There's a lot of good, like, Joss Whedon, like, team members ribbing on each other, but in a mostly positive way. I liked the dialogue a lot. I thought that was a real strength of this.
Yeah, I thought so too. It was also it was a big change going from, you know, the arc we did last week where you would read a page and there were just really dense pages. Mm-hmm. And you would read a page on this and you would flow through it really quickly because just the change in styles, I guess, between the two eras.
Yeah. Not to mention that John Cassidy does those, he'll do, like, panels with no text to show action. Because it's like, what do you, this, in old, if this was a comic in the 50s or 60s, it would be like, Cyclops breaks through one, he says, I'm using my optic beams to, like, attack, using my optic beams, it's easy to knock through a wall. And in here, you just show a wall being blasted by Cyclops. The whole bit with Kitty Pryde discovering Colossus,
mm-hmm.
I think it's 4 pages, and there's almost no dialogue.
Right.
I pulled it up. Colossus, the door opens, and Colossus is standing behind her. There's like bullets that are passing through her and bouncing off of Colossus. He runs through Kitty. And he's just, like, destroying these guards. And all she's like, Peter, stop, Peter. She basically talks him down from killing the guards. But it's just, it's a total of 10 words in, like, 5 or 6 pages. And it's incredible. It's really beautiful. It's very, like, expressive. And it's all red and black as well, because that's the color of the light in this weird torture room.
Right.
It's very stylish over, there's less expository stuff going on, so. It's
really. Yeah.
So overall, I'd say this is kind of one of the questions we talk about is if it's story-based or character-driven.
Uh-huh.
And I do feel like it's character-driven, almost because, like, the story resolves itself based on, like, the characters doing what they feel like is best.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not going to totally destroy the cure. They're going to get the mutant corpses that they're experimenting on, and also destroy the cure if they can. They're at the end of the story, right? They didn't get rid of the cure because Dr. Rao sent it to other places. But it's more about the team coming together and kind of working off each other.
Yeah, one of the other things that I thought was really interesting with this arc, and one that I think is somewhat common in X-Men stuff from what I've seen, not that that's much, I guess, but like this, you know, this mutant vaccine and whether, you know, it's good to take it or whether it's going to be used as a weapon against people and stuff like that. I think is a really interesting, I guess, storyline or theme or ethical question, whatever you want to call it. And it's easy for it to see, you know, real life parallels to things that go on in the world. You know, there was one, I guess, a couple examples. A year or two ago, Brian did a race, and it was a fundraiser race, and it was for the sponsor that he ended up going with for the race was one that was for autism. Hmm. And so, you know, we did like some social media posts, etc., for people to donate to the race. And there were a lot of people who responded that were like, this isn't a great charity because, like, just kind of their views on autism aren't great, One of the people that responded was a Facebook friend who, you know, he was kind of upset with charity because they kind of, he felt like they, he felt like there isn't something wrong with him per se as someone who has autism, and mm-hmm. and that's not the way that he feels this charity views him, and so, you know, it's something that he had an issue with the charity.
Yeah.
So
I have another kind of point of view on that too. There's a book called Far From the Tree, that kind of looks at different groups and how people. It's called Far From the Tree: Parents, Children, and the Search for Identity. But there's a whole chapter about deafness and how there's a community of people that are deaf, and they will tell you that being deaf is not a disability. It's part of their identity.
Right.
And so, like, they will, you know, talk about how like a hearing aid might be acceptable, but cochlear implants are not. And it even goes so far where apparently if a hearing person has a deaf child, there are some people that will try to encourage that person to give up their child to deaf parents. And there are people who have genetic deafness will try to find other deaf people so that they will have deaf children. Because it's a part of your identity and they don't see it as a disability. But if you or I were suddenly deafened, we would probably feel like it was a disability.
Right. Right.
Well,
and the final example that, is always, you know, pretty close to me, relates to being gay. You know, I went through when I was still in the Mormon church, I went through two sets of therapy that the purpose of the therapy was to try to turn me straight. And like, if there had been like a vaccine or a pill or whatever, like I totally would have been one of those people lined up outside Biogenesis or whatever, you know, wanting to get my shot. And so I think that part of what makes the X-Men effective or this story effective is how relatable some of these, how realistic some of these plots or themes are. So
it's interesting how good X-Men can consistently be at connecting with these ideas of like marginalized communities and like the social viewpoints on them, as well as like make someone like me, who is a CIS like het white guy, be like, oh, I hadn't thought about it that way, or maybe I don't have something to connect it to personally. And I think I had a conversation with you where I was like, Jay, I didn't realize this, and you were
right,
like,
yeah, Greg.
That was obvious, and I was like, all right, okay, gotcha. I didn't notice in the past.
Yeah.
And X-Men is really weird, right? Because like, maybe Beast wants to get rid of his powers because he is losing his self-control. Right. And like, maybe, you know, Rogue would want to be able to touch someone, but like, what about the people whose powers are just all bonuses?
Just wants to fly.
Yeah, like the kid who can fly, but it doesn't give you like the kid who has a fish for a head, or like the kid who can only breathe, I don't know, hydrogen or something, and like he'll suffocate if he's in the normal like atmosphere. It doesn't really give us something. And there are X-Men comics where they're like more, hey, this kid has a fucked up life because his mutant like mutation is just all bad. So yeah, I will say there's a really cool mutant later called Glob, who is a mutant whose parents are like anti-mutant zealots.
Okay.
And Glob's mutant power is that he has like a giant clear wax body with all his skeleton and internal organs inside it. And so he has a lot. I like that character. He has a lot of really interesting like shit he deals with. But Back to this comic.
Okay. So besides the theme that we talked about, are there any other main ones that you
I think it does kind of touch on the like nature of superheroics. And like part of it is when the X-Men are like leaving, they save a bunch of hostages. There's a lot of reporters who are like, were you the ones shooting the guns at the hostages?
Right,
and like,
yeah.
Did you do the bad thing? And they're like, why don't you ask the hostages? The news was being, the media people were being really shitty. And that kind of touches on it. Like, they're trying to get their PR better because it's gonna help them. But, so I do want to say, I wish this comic had more of that. More like PR, trying to like make themselves look more appealing, because it's a form of protection, because I think that's an interesting place to go with it.
I think another thing that was, I don't know if it was necessarily a theme of it, but at least a part of this storyline to me was kind of the interactions between Kitty and Emma Frost. And just in the, like, it felt like Kitty's kind of view was that she didn't really want to forgive Emma. Mm-mm. And so there's, it kind of had the question of, like, you know, who should you forgive, or when should you forgive, or, you know, things like that, which I think is also a interesting question with life as well.
That's a good one, yeah. I think, and part of it is, and I do like how in the dialogue it kind of explained why. Like, Kitty's first issue was Emma Frost kidnaps the X-Men, and... and so like you would be like, oh, okay, and I would be like, I don't remember that was so long ago. Like, I read that in a graphic novel in high school or something. But yeah, you know, it kind of helps to explain why. And at the same time, would you trust an unethical mind controller?
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm like, I don't know if like you could even trust that person. I did love the part where she like she mind controls some of the bad soldiers to like, if you ever hear the words parsley, inconceivable, or like something else, you will vomit uncontrollably for 48 hours.
Yeah.
That was that was fun. There's so many great little moments in this.
Yeah, I'd agree. So was there anything that didn't work for you?
I didn't like how they blanked out Wolverine's cursing. Because he had one that was, like, almost an entire, like, paragraph of blanked out cusses at Nick Fury. And I really want to know what he said.
I was going to say that there wasn't anything that fell on this list of things that didn't work for me. But then I remembered there was one thing. And how old is this comic again?
2004.
Okay, so... like, to me, this is a comic that, if you had told me this had released, like, a couple of years ago, or 5 years ago, or whatever, right, I could have believed you, because it feels, like, pretty high quality with the writing, with the art, and it feels modern, etc., with all those things. But there was one point that jumped out at me when, someone was cursing at something. And they bleeped out, the student telling Kitty Pryde that her ideas, like, all the mutants are going to band together, and we're going to be this one harmonious, you know, monolith standing together. And the student is like, you're an effing, and they bleeped out effing, and then said the R word, for being mentally deficient afterwards. And I was like, oh, that wasn't great. Don't like that.
I'll tell you, Jay, I still hear that word used pretty frequently. Not like super frequently, but I still hear that word a lot, even now. And like it's definitely on my like list with you where like I shouldn't say it. But yeah. It that was the one bit where it probably like dated itself.
Right.
Because everything you're
right. I don't
think
there's any chance in the world that gets printed today like that, right?
Well, I mean, it's in Marvel Unlimited, and oh, you know what though? They don't change it because we checked that other comic that
right where they it
blanked the N-word. Yep.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I think that they might.
I think they would do a different creative. They would. He would say
are you effing stupid? Like right. That kind of thing.
Correct.
But I think that's also why Kitty Pryde is so furious at him later. Because she's trying to, like, she's like, how much detention can I give a kid?
Right, yeah.
We're like, so.
And they're like, oh, so your stupid plan didn't work, huh?
Yeah. I love that. Yes. God, the back and forth is so good in this.
Yes, yes. All right, so we've basically been talking this whole time about things that we liked about it. Oh, I guess before we wrap things up. Character to add to the MCU. I mean, is there any choice other than Emma Frost?
Yeah, Brand. I would add Sword is coming into the MCU. It's going to be in cool. WandaVision, and that's the group that Agent Brand leads.
Okay.
And so in the MCU, it's different, and I think it's like an alternate reality or something, or like it's like a superhero version of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something. But I want Agent Brand to show up in WandaVision, and I'm really hoping she does, and it's just something we haven't been told yet.
That'd be cool.
I think I want Agent Brand. She's this really cool, like, half alien badass. That's why she has green hair. I want Agent Brand.
Yeah, I'm curious. Oh, I have to. I'll come back to it, I guess. I like your answer. I think the villain actually would be pretty decent as a villain as well. I thought he was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And Emma Frost, I think, would also be good. Real quick, speaking about Emma Frost made me think of another didn't work for me as well as it could have with this arc. Was there were just a few panels on how they drew Emma Frost that I was just like, kind of eye rolling that
she shows a lot of flesh. So
and her, like there's original one where she's like in front of an auditorium of like these teenage kids, and basically her ass crack is showing, and it, like, on the one hand, it made me kind of laugh because like any teenage boy, if their teacher looked like that and was doing that, there's 0.0% chance that they're learning anything, but
yeah, I don't know why Emma Frost never gets to wear like a normal outfit. Her original costume was basically like Bondage Queen.
Okay.
It would be the like way to describe it.
True.
And she's just never got past that like I'm super sexy thing.
Right.
I didn't
like the art on her that much in general, but I did also love the Beast.
I love how Beast looks here. Where he's starting to look like cat-like.
Yes.
Oh, I love it.
All right. Well, we're getting to time. So, two big thumbs up from us, correct?
Oh, yeah. This is
towards, like, the very top of the ones that we've read so far in my list.
Oh, yeah. Top 10, I'd say.
Yeah. Okay, so what is the comic arc for next week?
So we're going to be doing Storm next week. So the comic is called X-Men Worlds Apart. It's a one-shot, not a one-shot, I'm sorry. It's a mini-series, so it's only 4 issues. But it's really a Storm comic.
Nice.
So it's very centered on her. It shows kind of her struggle between being an X-Man and being the Queen of Wakanda. So
awesome. All right. So check out discountgamesinc.com. Check out Muse on Minis. Check out our Patreon and check it out at the start of February for our new pricing and everything going on with that. And also let us know on social media or wherever what you guys think of kind of the switch-ups on the format and whether you like it better how we're trying to do this. So we're eager to hear. And finally, thank you everyone who has been supporting the podcast. You guys are awesome, and we appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, thank you so much.